with episode 536 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I'm wondering if by the end of the week, Bronze Thumb is going to swoop in and save us all.
This is Gary from Jacksonville. I doubt we're going to see even the hint of his shadow, so that would surprise me. But I know he's having fun, so I won't complain too much this week that we don't have him here.
Yeah, well, you know, if he's going to be in the States, it's a good thing that he's not in this part of the States, because I want to know what we did to piss off Queen Elsa. That's all.
Yeah, but think how good his connection would be now that he doesn't have an ocean to navigate.
That's true. All right, well, we are obviously a trio this time around, and hopefully we can get through some of this week's genre news with a little more variety than what we've seen in the past few weeks, where it's just been casting, casting, and more casting. I'm just kidding. That's all they give us for news these days. But before we go any further than that, Edmund, if you could give us a disclaimer.
If you have not been keeping up on the news or on these shows you watch, I, as ever, must warn you that you will be horribly spoiled, because we will just talk about whatever we want to talk about, and that may include big juicy details from all of the above.
That's right. And, well, you know what? Before we get to the news, there was something from the last couple weeks that I wanted Gary's opinion on. We haven't really had a chance to hear from him on this one in a little while. Gary, I'm sure that you were watching all this news regarding the return of Spider-Man to the MCU with interest, shall we say.
Oh, very.
What's your opinion of all this?
Oh, gee, I'm happy for it. I think it is possible to make a Peter Parker Spider-Man that is entertaining and enjoyable. Wow, I guess taking the Fantastic Four and killing them really paid off, because it scared the heck out of Sony. what else? I would still like to see a Morales Spider-Man movie, but it doesn't need to be a Peter Parker one. I think we could have both and live just fine. I'm really not looking forward to Secret Wars at all, even with Peter Parker now brought into it, because, again, I thought it was a lousy series. And I'm looking forward to them being more inclusive with the Marvel Universe and Spider-Man. I felt it, while not all the movies were poor, they did lack a certain Marvel flavor that I would have enjoyed to have in them.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess I'm curious, you know, we went through the details a lot a few episodes back, and, you know, the thing that came to my mind was, yeah, you know, I understand that there's been some less than flattering opinions of, say, the latest Spider-Man movie. But overall, I didn't necessarily see why they had to reboot yet again. They could have essentially asked the MCU side of things to maybe help them get the franchise back on track, or at least align with what they've got with the MCU and the Avengers, and yet still retain Garfield as Peter Parker, because they thought he was a pretty good Peter Parker. And they wouldn't have to necessarily wipe out the first two films, maybe just go a slightly different direction now that he's going to be included in the MCU. I mean, I know that you too also get frustrated with these constant reboots and everything else and remakes and such. So, I mean, your thought...
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I agree. I thought Garfield did a decent job, honestly. And, you know, of the latest Parkers to be incarnated, I thought he was, you know, near the top. He gave that sort of casual do-good, I don't want to screw things up, and woohoo, I'm having a little bit of fun along the way. I thought he had captured the character really well, and I was sad to see that they're not going to carry him along, but I'm sure there's some sort of contractual reasons of why they do so. And I do have to say, I think it's contract issues more so than Garfield himself, because I think he represented himself well.
Yeah, what a crappy way to go out, though. You know, he probably was looking forward to something like this happening, and then to find out, oh, yeah, it is, but without you.
Oh, jeez. And I got to say, please, 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 please do not give us another origin movie. I've had too many already. There is not a person in the Western Hemisphere who does not have a passing familiarity with Spider-Man at this point. Please just jump into a story. Please, please, please don't. I poor Uncle Ben, I don't want to see him get shot or killed again. I don't want to see the robber run past Peter Parker again. I don't need any of that. I've seen it three times now in recent years for movies. I'm good. I'm good. Please tell a story and give me a flashback. You know, have some dialogue to explain it, and I'll be good.
Yeah, you know, that sounds about right to me. I really, really hope they don't go that direction. It might help that his first appearance in this kind of, like, gestalt that they've created is going to be, presumably, they still have yet to actually state this, as far as I know. It's going to presumably be in Captain America Civil War. So if they were to take time in that story to try and shove his origin in there, when it's already going to have more than enough story to tell, that would be a fatal mistake. Because they really don't need to do that. Having him there, not a problem. But that's where I thought that, okay, why would you not have it just be a progression from Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2 with Garfield? Because if they do similar things to what they did in the original comic story with Spider-Man and Civil War, having a familiar face is going to mean a lot more than just having somebody come onto the stage and kind of reveal himself to the world when we haven't even seen this guy as Spider-Man yet. Anyway, so.
Well, I am curious because, and, well, Edmund gave the disclaimer, I think. Yeah. So, in the comic book, what happens is Peter Parker's identity becomes public knowledge and there's a whole bunch of repercussions. And yes, it's a nice little gimmick or, little plot device to use, but at the same time, it ends up wrecking the character irrevocably, and so much so that they actually had to do a mystical reboot of Peter Parker and his whole life afterwards to clean up the mess. And I'm not looking forward to that. More importantly, I really felt it had damaged the character, and we actually had to do a, okay, we're going to pretend none of this ever happened stuff, which to me is a dishonest way of doing writing. As we continue on through, especially Marvel and DC too, with continuity issues, and we like to have things build one upon the other and have repercussions that are lasting, and we have to live with them, such as the breakup of S.H.I.E.L.D., that is one of those severe repercussions, and to have to pull it out away, which you would have to do eventually, is very disheartening. That they are going for the Civil War plot line. I was really hoping that they could skip over it, and we were going to stay sort of a little bit more intergalactic in the Avengers focus for a while. So I hope they do wonders, but I don't see how it's not going to screw everything up real bad. Oh, well, by the way, Tony Stark ends up dying at the end of it too. So, maybe they finish Downey's contract that way. So,
again, really?
Who knows if they're going to do it, but I'm just saying it horribly damages multiple major characters in the franchise. And so I don't get it.
Well, I'm hoping that – I know that all the speculation around the movie is – aligned with the comic, but let's face it, they're using the title Age of Ultron for the next Avengers movie, and it's not going to follow the Age of Ultron story arc from the comics. It's just, it cannot do that. It's basically just invoking the title, right?
Yes, yes, so, and they've said it's not going to, specifically, right. So.
Civil War, the Captain America movie, does not have to in any way follow the comic story. At the maybe the bare bones of it, the infamous split or difference of opinion between Captain America, Steve Rogers, and Tony Stark, right? That I feel like it
without getting too presumptuous,
What does need to be there? Really, nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen teasers from S.H.I.E.L.D. as well as Captain America, how Tony Stark has, I don't want to say taken over all of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s duties, but formed sort of a mercenary type of group that, that is handling some things that S.H.I.E.L.D. had handled in the past. And, Maria Hill is somehow involved in that. And so, I get the sense that they definitely are setting up sides, that they've been laying enough groundwork to know it will be, Stark against Captain America. So, so the basics are there already. And I don't think it's hard for you to take the leap to see that.
Yeah, exactly. So that part, yes, I could see that being involved because the fallout from Age of Ultron could certainly drive a rift between the two of them. And then, do you need to go through all of the aspects of what the comic tried to do? No, I don't think it needs to go all those places.
No, but the Parker revelation was the most significant.
Right, and that's the part that kind of concerns me, because if you try and shoehorn that in, but you've never seen the actor before, you have no history with the character within this universe, it's less paying
impactful.
Yeah, exactly. You're not paying off something that you set up, like the rift between Steve and Tony. Instead, you are invoking a history or an understanding that is outside of the medium that you're trying to tell the story within. It's where I had the problem with some of what Geoff Johns did in Smallville, because he'd introduce characters and just be like, well, you guys know who they are. No. If you're just a watcher of Smallville, you don't know who they are. And that's a problem. Like you might have some basics about it, but I think, in fact, the one, Gary, ironically, was the Legion of Superheroes episode that he did. He introduced like six characters, and if you don't know who they are, there was no context for them.
Know who they are? I know their middle names and their
yes.
sisters.
Well, yes. That's you. Well. I think that makes the point.
In several different realities, by the way. Thanks to
I'm
all the
not readers. Surprised. Anyway, Edmund, any thoughts on this discussion? I know you kind of had your own way in before.
Yeah, no, well, it's just the thing that still concerns me about is this whole thing of even though, yes, none of us want to reboot, want an origin story again, I'm still extremely wary of them saying that they want to go back to the high school Peter Parker. So if they're doing that, that kind of screams that they are going back to the origin again. And but it also makes no sense in terms of how they could fit that into Civil War. Unless they're just doing a completely different Spider-Man type story.
Well, don't worry. After this, in 5 years, they're going to do another reboot, and he's going to start out as a zygote. Anyhow,
yes.
Let's go ahead into what I think is probably better news for many of us as we go to the rundown from the past week. And I'm going to start with something that I actually am very happy to hear, and that is Adrian Palicki, who plays Bobby Morse on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., is now getting promoted to a series regular after having
wow.
been a recurring the first half. Yes, I'm surprised because I was given the impression that Bobby was supposed to be a short-term addition to the team, but apparently not.
I thought she might be some sort of like recurring guest star or somebody that would they touch base with every, you know, third or fifth episode or something like that, some special team person. But I'm surprised. I guess, you know, she has been a very popular character. They've written her well, and she you know, I do enjoy the character as well, so I can't say I wasn't happy to hear that news either. Although, I mean, I think we have such a large cast already, it feels like who's going to get the short stick? You know, I would think May, because they seem to perform a lot of the similar plot tasks.
Mm, but
yeah.
Edmund, I think you had a pretty good theory about why that might be.
I did. Did I?
Yes, why Bobby was coming in and May was maybe being sidelined a little. Your usual analogy, as I recall, was the Reese and Shaw.
I did think that was what you were referring to. Yeah, but just in terms of the behind the scenes stuff, as much as she is in incredible shape, this definitely could be a case of wanting to share the duties between a couple of different actresses so that one isn't getting beaten up all the time. Especially since they not only had her doing her own stunts, but then having to play herself as her double. So yeah, the idea that Ming-Na actually gets to take a bit of a break and maybe be more of the mother hen along with Coulson does make a certain amount of sense. And I'm just going to wildly speculate about behind the scenes stuff. It also may have been a case that Adrian Palicki wasn't sure if she wanted to commit, and now that she's been on the show a while and is having a lot of fun and seeing how good the fan reaction is, she decided that, yeah, she'd be happy to stay on for a while.
I hear the craft table is awesome.
Yeah.
I wouldn't blame her a bit. Gary, I know that, and long-time listeners know that one of your favorite actors is Tom Cruise. I'm sure that this next item was of great interest to you.
Well, I have issues with his presentations from time to time. And what you're alluding to is the TV show that they're putting forward that's based on the Minority Report movie that Mr. Cruise was in.
Yes.
And
this very clickbait worthy headline.
Yeah, right?
Oh, well, geez, that, and clickbait might be the right word, because I don't think anybody's going to be oohing and aahing, and no, Tom Cruise has not suddenly shifted to television dramas. But we are going to have the one of the people who, I think it was, he took care of the precogs, is going to be one of the main characters for this show, and it's going to be set 10 years further down the road from the original movie that aired. So we're going to see how the revelations of the movie, I guess, shook out. So anybody who's been looking for what happens after will get their wish, and we'll find out. I'm a little bit iffy about this. Some of the destiny, fate, pre-crime issues always left seems morally ambiguous to me. So I was never that thrilled with this whole premise. But at the same time, it's science fiction, and I always pray they do it well and draws more people in. So I will give it its obligatory, 3 to 4 episode try, and hopefully they win me over and several other people before anything happens.
Yeah, I have to admit I am a bit beside myself on this one, because as much as I want to see more science fiction, this is yet another example of them taking a film and adapting it for television, and the results of late have not been entirely promising. I mean, for every 12 monkeys that you get a Dominion.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We'll
see. Yeah, I got to admit, though, I mean, just seeing the quick little description that, yes, this is certainly in the aftermath of the film where, that pre-crime and the pre-cogs, that whole system did fall apart as a result of the events of the movie, not surprisingly, and that it's going to center around one of the three pre-cogs now trying to lead a normal life despite his ability to see visions of the future. And it's almost giving me a bit of an almost human vibe to it, but not necessarily in a good way. I'm starting to think I'd rather they'd continue with Almost Human than develop this.
Well, okay. How is that even then? Why even call it that? Why even tie it to the...
mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll see what it looks like.
Because, John, it guarantees that there will be 11% more viewers by using a previously existing... I was trying to explain this to somebody the other day. They're like, well, why... I think it was in relation to the Spider-Man issue we were talking about earlier. Well, why have a sequel for Spider-Man? Because it will make millions of dollars. Well, oh, but I want to see the Captain Marvel movie and this and that. It's like, well, yes, they said they will, but they're going to push everything back, but they're still going to make this. Well, why are they going to do that instead of all these awesome movies? Because this is guaranteed to make them millions of dollars.
Yes.
Well, also, you don't know. It might stink. It will still make millions of dollars.
Yes. Yes.
And I was beating myself in the head, and they were alternately arguing about Miles Morales movies and other Black Panther movies, and I get, I understand they were going for diversity and stuff like that. I'm not denying them that, but Hollywood is a business and they're going to make money. So when they get their hands on something that will literally turn the crank on the side of the box and spit money out, they're going to turn that handle. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. So.
Well, I don't understand. I don't think that dog was going to hunt anyway. If people look for Spider-Man, they're going to look for Peter Parker. That is what the public perception, the public expectation is going to be. No matter what the comic reading subsection, as small as it is, wants to see, they're looking for mass market appeal, like you said. So I never in a million years expected them to go down the Miles Morales route, because it would... I'm not saying that people would react negatively because of some kind of prejudice. It's just not the character that they want to see.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. I mean, it may be unfair to Morales, but he's a relatively new character, all things considered. And it was controversial at the time. So, Edmund, switch our topic a little bit here, if you don't mind.
Certainly. We have the latest ratings for Better Call Saul, and it is breaking cable records again. This was the live plus 3 results. That's the people who watched it live and those who watched their DVR'd copy within 3 days. And it's breaking cable records for the 18 to 49 demo and the slightly shifted 25 to 54 demo. Premiere episode went up to a total of 9.8 million viewers, which is a 40 and 43% jump in those two demos. So, and I believe that was the one that actually aired on the infamous Sunday night where there's always too much stuff. So it's no surprise that, yes, a lot of people let it sit and then watched it. And the two-night premiere wound up delivering a combined total of 15.6 million, which beat The Walking Dead's debut and Falling Skies premiere, which I guess apparently did well back when we were excited about Falling Skies. Interestingly, I know Gary, we did get Gary's low score along with mine for the premiere, and I will say that, yes, now that I am, the second and third episodes did improve on what I saw, what I saw, or rather didn't see in the premiere, so I am pleased to see that it is doing well, because I think it...
Okay, maybe I'll go back and revisit it then, but yeah, that first one was rough.
Yeah, I mean, as I kind of suspected just from that closing shot of that pilot. It was starting in the second episode was when they started getting into the territory that we're more familiar with from Breaking Bad. And
I got, but I didn't really want to consider the first episode a pilot. I mean, this is a well-worked character at this point, and so I was a little bit more critical of it than I would have been off a cold pilot.
Yeah, yeah. And but also just in that context, we don't need to revisit it completely, but it just seemed incredibly meandering. Anyway, I did not understand why they needed to give it 15 extra minutes for, what they were actually putting out there, since it was just spinning its wheels until it got to that final confrontation. But it does pick up from there. So.
Good to hear.
We will hear more about that, I'm sure.
Yes.
All right. In the meantime, we have news about casting for X-Men Apocalypse. Well, they've already announced that there's going to be new, younger actors for Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Storm, I believe, and now we have a new cast member in the form of Nightcrawler. The name of the actor is Cody Smith McPhee. I think that's how you say that. Hmm. And yes, he's going to be Nightcrawler, so Kurt Wagner is going to get another incarnation. Not surprising, if they were going to bring him in, it's going to have to be somebody younger in order to make sense within the context of the time period. Of course, it also might fall, and it might give us a little bit of an idea of where X-Men Apocalypse falls, because remember, at the end of Days of Future Past, the timeline was more or less wiped out, the original timeline anyway, for the films, and so this allows them to bring in Nightcrawler much earlier than he was originally introduced in X-Men 2. So, as if anyone remembers that, Nightcrawler had no idea who any of them were at that point. So yes, this clearly is kind of rebooting or re-envisioning the timeline as Days of Future Past suggested. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen?
Oh, I like the idea of a younger guy being cast. Kurt has always struck me as a guy somewhat Peter Parker-like in aspect, where he's trying to do good. He got out of a bad sort of he was stuck in a situation, and he's just, he's trying to enjoy life a little bit. So having an older, troubled person or a manipulated person doesn't quite work for the character for me. I don't think it speaks to the true voice of the character.
Yeah, and certainly just from his the still that they released, he does have a slightly unusual face, which looks like it'll mix very well with Nightcrawler and Kurt Wagner and his Germanic roots and demonic qualities. So I think they did good.
All right. And I believe we have some news regarding, Gary, you're a Disney person. You like Disney a lot. What do you think of this latest Disney news?
Oh, that the hat's coming down from Hollywood Studios. I'm thrilled. Oh, sorry. This was Disney news. Oh, yes. Yes. Unsurprisingly, as we talk about Hollywood and cranking out money from existing properties.
Yep.
Pirates of the Caribbean. Well, I don't think they're officially calling it Pirates 5. They're calling it Dead Men Tell No Tales. Has begun production down under in Australia. We do have a few common people returning. Johnny Depp, as well as Jeffrey Rush and Stephen Graham, as well as there's been hints about Orlando Bloom returning as well, but it's been spotty, so I can't 100% confirm that, but it's been mentioned in several other places. So I'll say that's a strong possibility. And, it's going to be much of the same, I imagine. Jack Sparrow is down on his luck, and, he's getting chased by
stuff.
Another captain. In this case, I believe the captain is going to be Javier Bardem. So, that's a little bit of gravity into the what otherwise might be a tongue-in-cheek movie. So that might be fun. And we'll have to see. They're seeking out the legendary Trident of Poseidon.
Okay.
Its owner can possess the power over the seas.
Convenient for a pirate.
Yeah, so it's helpful at least, yeah. So it's coming. I don't believe they have a release date as of yet, but it is in production. So, at this point, this is, I imagine, pretty much a go-through-the-motions machine. So I have no doubt it will be done in a timely manner. And for those who are not completely fed up with Depp as a pirate, you get another shot. And for those that are, you still get another shot.
There are some people who would say, given some of the other roles he's tried to do lately, just go back to Captain Jack. Just stick with that.
Yeah, I still have Tonto nightmares. Yes, I understand.
Mm. Edmund, as a fellow fan of Arrow,
yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about some additional casting that we have heard about? See, I told people, casting.
Yes.
They've cloned Felicity?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Gary.
Oh, okay. No. Sorry, go ahead.
They're saving that for the season finale. No, we have, there is a new villain coming to Arrow, Deathbolt, who will be played by actor Doug Jones. And
Deathbolt?
Yes.
Real? Death? Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah.
Yes, I had a feeling you were going to weigh in, and since they do admit here he is a C-list DC villain at best. Has power to manipulate electricity in the comics, but in the now DC TV universe, he will be a metahuman. So somebody coming out of the Flash's particle accelerator explosion, but appearing on Arrow, so providing another link there. And he's going to be portrayed by Doug Jones, who actually has a rather interesting resume, because he's appeared in a bunch of different science fiction things. He was the Silver Surfer in Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, Abe Sapien in both Hellboy and Hellboy 2. But notably, he actually has also gotten work as a contortionist, is one of these very sort of, you know, long, thin, gangly guys. And in both of those roles I just mentioned, he basically did the body work. And we had Lawrence Fishburne doing the voice of the Silver Surfer, and David Hyde Pierce doing his voice as Abe Sapien in the first Hellboy. But in the second one, Guillermo del Toro did finally relent, I guess, and allow him to do both the body work and the voice work. So yes, I presume he will be providing his own voice as Deathbolt.
Yeah, or the people who are paying the paychecks and deciding who was a recognizable enough voice. Either way,
yes,
it works. Gary, your thoughts on Deathbolt?
Yeah, he's a minor D-League villain who usually gets routed fairly quickly. They've never really involved him in any sort of long-range arc or extended storyline. He's usually, as I refer to him, a four-page villain, because he's done in four pages. He's almost a jokeable character. So for them to introduce him here, who he's not, he's never really gone up against Green Arrow in any way, shape, fashion, or form. It seems a little bit of a stretch. As they said, he is a Flash villain, actually. So I can only hope that his costume improves over the yellow lightning bolt with a skull on his chest. So I. Oh, and on his sticking out of his head as well, if I remember the costume correctly. So. I can hope, but I think he could have played better in Flash, but I guess they'll bring him over and see what happens. So,
when I hear Deathbolt and Arrow, I only can think of yet another Arrow-based character, mm-hmm. or archery-based character, as the case may be. We'll see. I doubt it, though.
They didn't ever put that much planning into him, John, but it was a nice try.
If I don't try, no one will. That's how I see it. All right, well, perhaps better news for those of us who are still fans of Marina Baccarin.
Woo-hoo,
she is going to be nabbing the female lead in Deadpool, because after her tenure on Gotham, she said, surely there's better comic book material out there. Well, we shall see. This is Deadpool, after all. It could go anywhere. But she's going to be starring opposite Ryan Reynolds, of course. And, who knows what this is going to turn out to be. Quite honestly, anybody who knows anything about Deadpool knows that he is kind of the go-to character for just about any kind of zininess you could possibly want. And I have a feeling that this is going to be a much better vehicle for Ryan Reynolds than Green Lantern was. But welcome to what could be a much better property in the comic book world, Marina Baccarin. All right, let's see here. Wow, now this is some interesting news that happened throughout the week. Edmund, please, if you don't mind, the next item.
Certainly. This is latest news from Neil Blomkamp, who, of course, has Chappie about to come into theaters. This is apparently there is a series of Instagram images that he tweeted out that went viral, representing the dream project that he always wanted to do that has now apparently come to fruition, and that is a new installment in the Alien franchise. At the time, he shared the images saying basically, well, the project's dead. I might as well let people see these. Basically created such a frenzy that apparently the studio is relented and is basically going to let him work it up. So we will see if it actually comes to fruition this time, and we can look forward to something in the Alien franchise apart from the Prometheus sequel.
This is really an odd way for them to test out audience demand, I guess, because that's exactly what this smacks of. Throw it out there. Let's see how people react. If there's enough clamor, maybe we'll actually do a treatment on it.
Yeah.
Well, they teased it a few months ago, so I was surprised when this popped up again.
Right? I can only imagine there's some kind of study going on, especially after Prometheus didn't quite hit the notes that people wanted it to.
Yeah.
But that was more forcing a story that was going in a different direction and trying to make it more of an Alien prequel, when if they had just stopped trying to do that, it probably would have been better received, at least in my mind, although I am somewhat more favorable towards it than many are. Gary, how about this next piece of news?
Let's see. Yes, and this has been reported in odd ways, and I can only scratch my head, because what we're talking about is Jim Starlin's Dreadstar series is going to be adapted as a scripted television series. Most of the reports I've read have actually somehow tied this into Marvel, and as I read into it, it is not. More importantly, Marvel does not own this property. It is a creator-owned property. It was printed by Marvel at one time, as well as at least two other comic book companies. But it is wholly owned by Jim Starlin. And when you say Jim Starlin, you know, who the heck is he? He's the one that came up with Thanos in the first place. He came up with a lot of what we currently think is extraterrestrial Marvel universe. He pretty much invented it and laid out all the basic plot work for it. So I'm really thrilled. I've followed Dreadstar since its original run in Epic Comics, which was a creator spinoff of that Marvel ran with creator owned properties in it for a long time, as well as I believe this went through First Comics, and there was a second comic book company that it went through at one point, maybe Dark Horse. No, it didn't go through Dark Horse, but there was another comic. Regardless, it's about a man who's hard off on his luck, and at one point he finds a sword. And the sword starts him on his hero's journey to free the universe from oppression from the Universal Church, with a head of the church being very much a Darkseid / Thanos guy, but just not so much in love with death. You know, a bit more practical. So. He's a much more believable opponent than Thanos or someone else might be to you. And, it goes through a lot of variety of different stories over time, but it was well thought out. It makes you question religion. It makes you question what you believe yourself, as well as having, yes, ray guns and catmen as well. But there's a lot of material they can pull through. I could see several seasons coming from this. If you scroll through think Comixology or something like that, I believe there is at least one free episode of this series floating through, if not hit the Wikipedia. I can't say that there's spoilers. I don't think it hurts or wins you over to necessarily read summaries of them. You'll see the plot lines for what they are and be interested in them. So I'm thrilled about this. I really want to see how gritty they're going to make it. Starlin does not do a clean science fiction Star Trek universe. It's a very gritty, grimy place that has typically humanoid bodied aliens that don't mind killing each other. So I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully they keep away from the superhero suit that he does later get in his adventures.
Yeah, it sounds like that's something to avoid as far as costuming goes. I vaguely recall this from back in the day in Epic Comics, but I will be interested in seeing how this gets received, because it is certainly not what I think some people are going to be expecting when it comes to something that is a comic book universe. I think this is a bit darker than that, and but it is an interesting way to get some insight into the mind that created Thanos, because when you get into it, he liked to do this kind of strange, almost anime-esque rather mix and mashup of various genres, you know, between classic sci-fi, almost, you know, Flash Gordon type stuff, and mix it with some really dark philosophical material.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, that's a great word to put it. It is a very dark series. It is not a happy-go-lucky, as you said, you know, shoot the big guns and then we're off to the next happy world. No, this gets ugly at several different points throughout the storyline. And one of his group of characters has a really cool power. It's I think it's called like something like technolepathy or something like that, where she's able to control like automation and things like that through her mind. She also has a pet monkey that she actually see through because she's blind as well, which is an interesting twist on a character.
Yeah, like I said, I vaguely recall it, so it would be interesting to go back and see that again, you know, so many years later. But certainly Starlin has a very distinct voice, and it's not always something that meshes well with the big name properties. I mean, like you said, he did create Thanos, but and in fact, if I recall correctly, probably the works that people know him best by would be the Infinity War stuff. That got into some really weird places because it was very cosmic and got into the stranger outer space philosophical areas of the Marvel Universe. But yeah, I mean, he did do some of that stuff, but it was more toned down from what his personal creator stuff was by far.
Yeah, and if you want to see what I consider to be the high watermark of his work, would be the Death of Captain Marvel. It was one of the first novels that Marvel had ever put out, and it's about a superhero dying of cancer. You know, there's some fights and things like that, but it's really a heartfelt story about a man coming to peace with his life. And it's, you know, for a comic book, as I look back, I'm like, how did he ever let them get this published? Because it's really, you know, it's this little drama of a story that really does not involve superheroes. It's about friends and loss and lovers and, you know, and having to accept your fate. It was years ahead of its time. You'd expect something like this nowadays, but you have to remember that was done in the mid 80s. So,
it was definitely a watermark. And I recall at the time that no one wanted to be the person who would bring back Captain Marvel because it was considered almost sacrilegious to do that, because it was one of those few deaths that deserved to stick. But of course we are now in the era where the real, to never bring back character of Bucky has long since been brought back. So that era is long since passed. But yeah, the death of Captain Marvel, wow, that's going back quite a while. And yeah, that was one that shocked a lot of people, and was one of those first graphic novels that got lauded for being almost literary, if I recall.
Oh, very much so. And even if you're not a comic book person, try and hunt it down or download it. It is well worth the reading. It is really not a comic book story. It just involves comic book people.
Well, something that is a comic book story is, of course, Thor. And we saw a couple movies where Jamie Alexander was playing Sif. Well, we may know what her next project is here if NBC's pilot for Blindspot gets picked up. Apparently in this, she's going to be starring as Jane Doe, a beautiful woman who finds herself at the center of an investigation after climbing out of a duffel bag in the middle of Times Square.
Oh, who hasn't done that?
With her memory wiped and no clue as to what the extensive tattoos on her body mean. As the FBI began to trace the roadmap on her body, they uncover a larger conspiracy while discovering the secrets behind Jane's identity. So I'm seeing either a really serious version of The Hangover or what Bronstam calls Friday Night in Manhattan.
Yes.
Yeah. So one or the other, or a mashup of both. I'm not sure. All right, let's see. Edmund, a little bit of news about some sci-fi that is thankfully getting good attention and good support.
Yes, absolutely. The latest news out of Amazon from their pilot season is that Mad Dogs, their remake of the British show, has been picked up. I think, as I mentioned when we were first talking about this, the fact that it is Sean Ryan behind it is giving me hope that it will, if it does get to spool out for a few series, as the British one did, that it does it in a better fashion. Let's just say things got kind of crazy and downhill by the third series there. Also, but the big news is that The Man in the High Castle has in fact been greenlit to series. So for all of us who have enjoyed the pilot and are looking forward to seeing what, at least based on that evidence, is going to be one of the better Philip K. Dick adaptations, we are going to get to see what they do with it. And also The New Yorker Presents also got greenlit, but that is perhaps a more esoteric interest to some of our audience members.
This would be true. All right, we are then going to move on to some news here about Constantine, or rather no news about Constantine, which is itself news. Gary, help me with the confusion.
Oh, I disagree. It is news, John. Listeners, pay no attention to the man behind the microphone. This is good news. Constantine has not been canceled. It hasn't been renewed either, but it has not been canceled. So there is still hope for, you know, those who like to see John bash demons' heads in. They're going to review it later in the year, I believe in May, and they're going to creators are going to come up and show a plot line and some sample stories. And if NBC likes it, they said that they'll be willing to pick it up. So I'm happy for that. Yes, do I wish it was renewed earlier? Has it been showing great promise and been picking up? Yes, it has. But regardless, it's not the death sentence we expected it to. You know, much like John Constantine himself, he usually manages to turn a bad situation slightly less bad. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I'm happy with this. I mean, the networks must start to see that these comic book inspired characters do have potential and can take off. And it looks like they're going to give them more than just a sitcom shot to prove themselves. So I'm optimistic that Constantine will see season two.
Yeah, I said no real news because, in fact, you know, there had been all that talk about them maybe moving into sci-fi under the name Hellblazer. The show was not canceled. At this point, Constantine is Schrodinger's TV show. We won't know until they open the box in May.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, and the only thing I will mention is the one thing that gives me a little bit of hope is that, of course, some of its fellow freshman series on NBC haven't really been that good or aren't doing that well. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we might see a few casualties by May that will make the executives even more amenable to keeping a show that has some buzz and potential around.
I'm sure that that's what it is. I mean, they're hedging their bets until they know what happens with the mid-season shows, right?
Yeah.
They probably expected Allegiance, for instance, to be a major hit. And if that's not happening, well, there's this other show over here that's not doing great, but it's doing good enough.
Yeah.
Like most of NBC.
Yes.
Good enough. So the last thing we're going to talk about here is kind of an out-of-the-box type of news item. No. Yeah, pun entirely intended. Because everything these days has to get the opportunity to be a franchise or TV show, Settlers of Catan
might
be the one on the list. It has secured the producer Gail Katz, who was behind Air Force One and The Perfect Storm, has to the multiplayer strategy game, The Settlers of Catan. Now, Gary, I think you're at least passing familiar with this game.
I've never actually played it. I've watched it played, but yes.
Okay, so is there what you would call a deep story behind this that would beg for film or television treatment? And are we talking about something with the clear depth of mythos, like Battleship, that just demands to be on the big screen?
I didn't think so. It's pretty wide open. But when I see something like this, I try to keep in mind the old Dungeons and Dragons cartoon that was out in Saturday mornings. Yes, you have sort of this knowledge and lore in this starting place, but if you pick and choose and develop things properly, maybe it'll turn into something. But I agree, there is no clear path for this property. So they're pretty much going to be making everything up where, you know, if they want to tack Settlers of Catan onto some series and make it, they're tacking on the name of Settlers of Catan to some series and making it. There really isn't a storyline, if I recall correctly. You land on an island and you're trying to build stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds to me like the perfect opportunity for Hollywood to do.
Oh, God, no! Oh, gee. Sorry.
Whoa, okay.
Wait a minute. another series on an island, I get kind of skittish.
Okay.
Yes.
Step away from the microphone. Yes, I have one of these. Yeah.
I was trying to stay away from that aspect, but.
Yeah. What I see happening here is not unlike what Hollywood often does. They take somebody else's script that has nothing to do with any type of franchise, and they say, can we take this story and connect it to something that people recognize? And then you have Die Hards 2, 3, and 4, and so on. But I see that perhaps happening here. I just can't wait until they create the film for Go. That's going to be awesome. Or Pong. Go meets Pong.
That's I'm holding out for Q-Bert.
There is a remake of that game that just came out recently. I'm not kidding.
Well, John, much like many movies, I didn't care for the first one, so I probably won't be seeing the second.
Yeah, I've got to admit though, this is a game where I'd heard the name, I didn't really know the premise, but just from what I see in this article here, that what immediately jumps out to me is, kids land on an island, must barter and compete with each other for various resources. Yes, somebody thought they could make the next Hunger Games with maybe a little Lord of the Flies mixed in.
Well, as inspirations go, it's not the worst thing. And let's just end it there.
Just end it. Next story.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.